From Bureaus Worldwide, this is CNA 938 World Report. I'm Laura Macon-Isherwood in London.
And I'm Jagruti Dave in Washington. We begin today with UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson still defying calls to resign, even after a day in which dozens of Conservative MPs left his government. It follows days of controversy over how Downing Street responded to misconduct allegations against a senior member of his government who was forced to resign last week. But after a whirlwind day at Westminster that many predicted would end in the Prime Minister's demise, he's telling allies he'll keep fighting. Ollie Barrett reports from London.
As calls for Boris Johnson's resignation intensified, Wednesday was always going to be difficult for him. Firstly, he had the weekly Prime Minister's questions session to get through, but Boris Johnson insisted he was staying put.
They want to focus on this type of issue, Mr. Speaker. We're going to get on with our jobs.
Across the aisle for PMQs, opposition Labour leader Keir Starmer calling for the Prime Minister to go and for an election and being critical of those who've stayed in Cabinet through recent controversies from Partygate to the latest scandal about the conduct of a former senior Conservative MP, Chris Pincher.
In the middle of a crisis, doesn't the country deserve better than a Z-list cast of nodding dogs? Yeah!
Later in the day, Boris Johnson had a long scheduled appointment with the Commons Liaison Committee. 2 hours of questions on a wide range of political issues and affairs of government. But questioning MPs took it upon themselves to update Boris Johnson through the session as resignations from his government continued, which led Angus McNeill to this question.
Even more resignations since any Prime Minister's in 1932. The game's up, really. Will you be Prime Minister tomorrow?
Of course, Mr. McNeill. Next week? I'm here to, rather than giving any running commentary on my own career, I'm here to talk about what the government is doing.
That's what I was telling Stephen.
Sajid Javid, who quit as Health Secretary on Tuesday, gave his resignation speech in the House of Commons on Wednesday. He said Boris Johnson's leadership was damaging the Conservative brand.
I'm deeply concerned about how the next generation will see the Conservative Party on our current course.
Former Justice Secretary and longtime Boris Johnson critic David Gawk agrees.
I think there are some big challenges for the Conservative Party, having been in office for a long period of time, having got quite a sort of broad coalition of support at the last general election. Trying to fashion some sort of coherence out of that is difficult. But there is also a big point here, which is, political parties have to be broadly trusted. And the problem is that the lack of trust in Boris Johnson is contaminating the Conservative Party as a whole.
So if Boris Johnson hangs on for now, despite the raft of resignations from his government, it may be back to the 1922 committee, which guards the leadership rules of the Conservative Party. It has an executive election next week. If the executive gets filled with anti-Johnson MPs, they could change the rules to allow a confidence vote in the Prime Minister earlier than currently allowed. He's said to be promising to fight that if it arises. Bloomberg political correspondent Ellen Milligan says inside Downing Street there's a split on what he should do next.
There are two competing schools of thought going on in number 10 at the moment. One that he should go, one that he should stay.
For now, it looks like Boris Johnson is siding with the latter camp. Ollie Barrett, London.
China's foreign minister, who is on a tour of Southeast Asia ahead of the G20 summit in Indonesia, says he's hopeful for a new golden era of China-Philippines relations. Wang Yi made the comment after meeting the new Philippine leader, Ferdinand Marcos Jr. in Manila, who on Tuesday said he hoped to find ways to resolve the conflicts between the two countries. One of those conflicts includes a territorial dispute in the South China Sea. At the same time, Marcos Jr. has said he wants the relationship with China to be broader than that one issue. On Wednesday, he tweeted that he and Wang Yi had discussed agriculture, infrastructure and energy, an indication that Manila wants to keep business with Beijing in the foreground. Joshua Kalancic is a senior fellow for Southeast Asia for the US-based think tank, the Council on Foreign Relations. He explains the challenges facing the Philippines and its new leader when it comes to relations with China.
If Marcos Jr. is to take a warm approach to China, he's going to be taking it in conflict with virtually all of the senior uniformed military who think that China can't be trusted, because even while China in the prior administration with Rodrigo Duterte was promising many things, including increased infrastructure aid, and at different times promised to take a less assertive view, I should say, in the South China Sea, where the China and the Philippines have major disputes over claimed exclusive economic zones, fishing rights, etc. And China has steadily encroached on what are legally the Philippines' rights. The Philippines actually went to a international tribunal in 2016 in The Hague, which found that the Philippines had certain exclusive economic zones in the South China Sea and that China was directly encroaching on them. The Philippines can't avoid China. U.S. analysts sometimes make the mistake of these countries in Southeast Asia can necessarily choose between the United States and China. And they often have chosen the United States as their strategic ally, but China is Southeast Asia's biggest trading partner. It's not going anywhere. So Marcos can't avoid China, even if he wanted to, but he wants to reinvigorate aid and investment to the country. And the Philippines desperately needs investment in infrastructure and aid. Well, at the same time, he needs to try to make sure, unlike Duterte, that that aid and infrastructure actually arrives.
That was Joshua Kalantsik from the Council on Foreign Relations. Meanwhile, the heads of Britain and America's intelligence agencies have issued a warning about the threat posed by China to both nations. They made their first public appearance together at MI5 headquarters in London. Director General of MI5, Ken McCallum, warned businesses that if they're involved in cutting-edge tech, AI and other advanced research, then the chances are their knowledge is of material interest to the Chinese government. He also accused China of conducting cyber espionage and of engaging in political interference. But he said the aim here is not to cut off from China. FBI Director Christopher Wray, meanwhile, said the US on average started a new investigation into Chinese spying every 12 hours. He also warned of the damage to global businesses if China invades Taiwan, drawing parallels with Russia's war in Ukraine, which he said has cost companies in the West $59 billion, according to estimates in a Yale University study. China has previously rejected accusations that it's behind hacks on Western entities or that it engages in mass cyber espionage, describing these as political smears. Beijing has in turn claimed its companies are victims of US-backed cyber attacks.
Up next, COVID cases rise across Japan, sparking fears of a seventh wave of infections.
That's ahead as CNA 938 World Report continues.